This is the Unpopular Podcast with Josh Withers, and joining me today, Tess McCabe. How you doing, Tess?
Well, thank you, Josh. Thanks so much for having me on.
I've got to show off just because I've realised that I've done something extraordinary today and I haven't told anyone, and you're the first person outside of my my home that I've talked to, so if I can gloat, I am. I'm standing here in wet swimmers. I've just come back from the beach. How good is being self-employed? You just go to the beach before you start work.
I know, and then you can work in your swimmers. Amazing.
Absolutely, yeah. It's great.
That would probably violate some kind of HR policy or something in any regular workplace.
Yeah, luckily for me, I've got HR on my payroll, so she knows what's what.
Awesome.
Tess, give me a bit of an introduction to what you do, because I know what you do, but I always find it funny when we look at different people through different lenses, we've got different understandings of what they do. So how do you kind of introduce yourself as to what you do?
Oh, it's tough, and often it's about who I'm speaking to. So generally I say I'm a graphic designer because for the most part I make my living servicing clients. I work independently with their branding or more recently a lot of book design work. So people approach me rather kind of for their small business to do sort of a logo and website. You know, that's how people get their things going these days. And because of my background in publishing and a publishing, I suppose, passion business that I run alongside my design work, I'm getting a lot of people who are in the self-publishing space coming to me to look to design their books for them. Yeah, so I say I'm a graphic designer, but to be honest, I guess I have a background in graphic design, and that really informs all of the other bits and pieces that I do and have worked on throughout my sort of 10, 12-year career. A couple of years ago I started publishing my own books under my company Creative Minds, and it started really organically, very much as a response to having to do a lot of projects for clients and wanting to do my own thing that didn't have sort of client sticky fingers all over it. And it, my very first book, Conversations with Creative Women, sprouted from another, I suppose, side project of mine, which was an organisation called Creative Women Circle, which I run here in Melbourne, but we have events all over Australia now. It was a book basically of interviews with women in different creative industries from around Australia, just about their careers and creative lives. And it was sort of Creative Women's Circle events turned into book format. So making it a little bit more accessible to people who necessarily weren't in Melbourne or the places we held our events. And so being involved in that, that group for so long kind of taught me a lot of very random different business skills about organizing events and about marketing and social media and all of that kind of stuff. So nowadays I kind of do a whole host of random bits and pieces in order to make a living / make a life. So yeah, I'm sort of moving into still doing design, but I do a bit of kind of marketing and social media kind of stuff as well.
Would you agree that you don't see many graphic designers in their deeper into their career? I was going to make an age relevance, but it's not about age. It's a length thing, because once you really dig your teeth into graphic design, you actually find yourself more. You want it to be an applied graphic designer, so not just a graphic designer, but I'm not just sitting in Illustrator or Photoshop or whatever happens to be in front of you today. I'm applying it whether it's an industry or a skill. You take it to next level. Would you say that's true for you?
Yeah, that's it. I think graphic design, it's a really kind of poor probably descriptor of the job and the title and the tasks and that kind of thing, especially these days. It's just so broad. Graphic designers could be mostly working in the digital space and doing web content and app design and that kind of thing. I see it these days as very much a skill set that I have, and it really does inform in the positive sort of the marketing and social media content development stuff that I work on, because you do just have that innate sense of what works typographically, what works visually, what makes a coherent brand in the visual sense when you're working on those bits and pieces. Book design is also its own sort of subculture of the graphic design job title, I suppose. And I know many colleagues who are book designers, and that's the only thing they do day in and day out. And again, I love that as well, but I also, in publishing my own books, really like the process of content development and a bit of writing and a bit of editing and that kind of stuff. So I see, yeah, being a graphic designer is kind of underpinning everything I do, and it's a great launching pad as well for sort of putting my fingers in different pies and popping in and out of other industries that I wouldn't say, you know, oh, I definitely do this. I just do a little bit of this and that.
You came into my world through a book that I couldn't quite see if you just did the cover design or you did the design throughout the whole book, but Sharon's book, Owning It.
Well, yeah, actually, I sort of did pretty much everything except for actually write the content. Sharon Gavoni is a intellectual property lawyer here in Melbourne, and we became friendly through Creative Women's Circle a number of years ago because she is very passionate about helping creative people understand their legal rights and responsibilities and around copyright and intellectual property, which is huge for designers these days when we're, you know,
she's another good example of the applied side of it, because she's not just lawyer, IP law, she's deep in the creative.
She really is. Jungle. Yeah, so we really kind of spitballed some ideas as to how to get, how to myth bust a lot of things that were sort of rife in the creative industries that she was seeing as a lawyer, her clients coming to her, and that I was seeing just from being ingrained in the local creative community here and seeing, you know, unfortunate accounts of friends and colleagues having their work, you know, effectively ripped off by larger companies, whether they be illustrators or artists, that kind of thing, or just having bad experiences with clients given that there weren't sort of proper contracts in place. So, yeah, we sort of put our heads together and said there needs to be a book about this that people can really get a sense of and refer back to regularly what their rights and responsibilities are and how to be proactive about protecting themselves when often they're just solo operators and they don't have big, you know, funds to be able to fight their legal battles the proper way day to day. So, yeah, that was almost 2 years of both our lives putting that book together, and it's quite a tome, as you know. It's 560 pages with lots and lots of sections sort of covering everything that we thought that creatives who do, you know, have lots of strings in their bow. I use a lot of metaphors just to be upfront. For example, you know, designers can also be bloggers, can also be writers, can also do product design, you know, and we wanted a book that kind of touched on all of those different industries and the different legal bits and pieces that might be relevant to that. So, yeah, Owning It was I acted as publisher, designer, you know, helped kind of shape the content from, you know, coming from a lawyer to coming, you know, I guess being able to be digested by someone who didn't have a legal background at all. We worked together to get heaps of examples from the wonderful creative Australian community of people doing really good things with their work and protecting themselves. So, yeah. It's our baby.
It's the kind of book, if you're looking for a book where you can, to use another metaphor, like, you know, you can throw the book at someone, good book.
Yes. Like, but this is the book that you can throw at.
I wanted to sort of share my customer journey as far as getting to your world, because I find customer journeys really fascinating, because we, particularly in marketing, we have this idea that, all right, I'm going to put a billboard on the main street, people will see the billboard, and then they'll pay me money. And mm-hmm. and
if only it was still that easy.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, everyone takes such a unique customer journey, and because Sharon was speaking at a I think there was multiple people speaking, but I only had time to see Sharon. And at this point, I didn't know who she was, but I saw the whole IP law description, and I thought, oh, that's something that I need to know more about. And because I felt like I had a little bit of intelligence, but not enough to write a book about it or run a seminar. And so I got to see her there, and then she mentioned the book, and I went back and I bought the book from the table at the back. And I'm assuming that if that was the end of the relationship, then I might not have ever ended up on your email list, and because I bought the book and I think I paid card and it was done. But I've got a cousin who does a lot of animation for Disney. He was just he was one of the animators I worked on the Jungle Book. I just won an Academy Award. Oh, the Oscars.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the Oscars. Hmm. Yeah. I get my awards mixed up. And And he, but he's also working on his own stuff. And we just got talking about the lawful side of it. And I walked away from that thinking, I think I know what I'm getting Craig for Christmas. And so I ordered the book through the website, and which ended up on me receiving. Now, it was pronounced Silog. The email
Silage runs with village. Yeah,
but what does Silage mean?
It actually means like a curated collection. So strangely, it's often referred to with regard to like ancient coins, like people, you know, collect coins and that kind of thing. But I was looking for a word that, and this is the branding side of me. I was looking for a word to name my newsletter that meant kind of curated collection of things. And it was just a word that people were like, what the hell does that mean? It sounds like something from IKEA, you know? And yeah, just a little bit quirky and fun. And yeah, really, I mean, my weekly newsletter was very much an excuse for me to put together all of the interesting links that I find online, all the interesting things that I've read or podcasts that I've listened to or videos that I've watched that week, really as a, I really try to maintain a non-Facebook like content consumption rule to myself, not just the endless scroll, actually seeking out and finding interesting content online, of which there is a lot, as you know. And then I thought I need to do something with this that, you know, shares it with other people. So, yeah, I put together a silage, a collection of five interesting content-related links from the week, and I send that out to everyone on Friday afternoons at 3 o'clock when people are just getting a little bit, they're about to switch off and they feel like they should probably look like they might be doing work or at least, you know, feeding their brain with something interesting. So yeah, I've actually just finished today's Friday. I've just finished the silage for today. So it should be popping into inboxes this afternoon.
So I've got two questions around silage and also the new normal, your podcast, because you've really, I'm going to say successfully, but everyone's good and measured success differently. But I feel you've successfully managed to create a tribe of people that care about you because you do stuff that matters, in the podcast, in your in the newsletter, and also, you know, you're obviously writing books, which is almost like the ultimate content creation, because you get a bunch of content and you strap it into some paper, and you know the only way you can change that is by getting a pen and visiting everyone's house.
Yeah, that's it. And also, you know, someone might dig it up from the ruins of post-apocalyptic world one day. You know, no one's digging up, you know, a newsletter from. Yeah,
it's a really interesting way of looking at it. Like, I can imagine aliens sifting through our digital ruins.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it just says 404 page, you know, not found. It's like, oh well.
Oh gosh. Yeah. So the two questions around that is, like, because I've got my understanding of why, but a question to you. Why, and then particularly in the newsletter, what your kind of workflow-ish kind of, you know, just like, you don't have to get full nerdy, but like if there's any technical workflow to the newsletter. So, but first of all, a why on the whole lot, whether the books, the podcast, the newsletter.
Look, I guess probably like the beginning of all of those sort of side project ideas is just wanting to be involved with bits of work that excite me and that I wish existed. So, you know, with my very first book, which was just a collection of interviews with creative women about their careers and career path and, you know, how they manage it all, that was really just the book I really wanted to read and I want to read over and over again. And so I sort of thought, well, if I can put this together, then I'm, you know, I'm enjoying that content. I'm also putting it together for other people to enjoy. And same thing with the podcast that I co-host with my friend Emma Clark Grattan. It's about parenting and parenting specifically when you are a person who perhaps runs their own business or is self-employed or works for themselves. Emma and I have been parents for 5 years now, and we constantly chat about, you know, all of the crazy things that happen and how we manage it all. And we really want to know how other people do it as well. And I'm a huge fan of podcasts, and I probably, if, you know, if I didn't run this podcast, I would definitely want to listen to it all the time. And so it's a wonderful way, I guess, for me to kind of, and again, with Silage, it's a way to kind of encourage myself to seek out interesting people, seek out interesting content, learn, and learn by doing, and then just, you know, not just keep it to myself, put it into some kind of package that other people can then enjoy. Because if I was on the other side, I'd really want, you know, someone to share that kind of stuff with me. So, yeah, I think it's almost like a, you know, I feel like we receive these days so much fantastic free content through podcasts and articles and all and blogs and all of that kind of stuff. It's kind of a way to say, well, here's what I've learned and here's, you know, here's what I can contribute to this big pot of fantastic sharing and learning that we all do on the internet.
It's such a beautiful way of describing the sharing sort of thing, because I know that I've experienced people talk about other people that are creating content. I heard about one wedding photographer who was putting out educational content. You know, here's how I do it, here's how you can do it, and another photographer's got negative things to say about that. And when the truth of it is that to share is such a humble, generous act, because like you might have just figured out how to do a newsletter. You've just gone and researched how to do a newsletter, and you can just keep that to yourself. And it's legal, it's moral, it's ethical. Like it's if anything, it's probably the most morally, ethically kind of the legal thing you can do. Like learn and shut up.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, I kind of struggle with this too, because I see a lot of people who, like you say, they kind of, you know, will do something that kind of makes them an income or makes them a living, and then they share exactly how they do it for everyone to, you know, right down to the nitty gritty, for everyone to take that on and do it themselves. And I almost feel like sometimes I'm not quite there yet. Like there's been certain times definitely in my career, if I've been honest, where people have almost asked like a little bit too much, and I've sort of said, I don't know, this kind of falls into a little bit of, you know, you're taking a shortcut here. You're not necessarily taking this and putting your own spin on it or putting in the work to find your own way. I'm definitely, there's been some things where, because of the way I kind of share information, people possibly feel like they can take advantage of that. And I'm, you know, I'm still a business person. I still have a business mind. And I think there's probably a fine line for people who do feel that way, who do feel like, but if I share all of these things, doesn't that mean that, you know, I'll never get another client or all of that kind of stuff. I think it's about being very conscious of what you share, how much you share, and how that's coming back to you in terms of, you know, visibility or just general kind of marketing or brand awareness and that kind of all those buzzwords, versus really giving away your hard-earned secrets, not secrets, just, you know, the knowledge that you build up. I'm very much into kind of mentoring and helping people who are coming up and that kind of stuff. But yeah, certainly I wouldn't say that I'm not conscious of people who are possibly just sort of trying to data mine information that is readily available, because I found it out, you know, how could, you know, it's not something that, that I don't feel a little bit icky about sometimes, where people possibly get a little bit too forthright with their questions.
There's an interesting divide there, because there's information that's clearly Googleable, like just open the browser tab. And then there's parts of your world that you're willing to share and parts of your world that you're not willing to share. I know, and I wonder if this is true of many of us that overshare comes across as a negative term, but I think overshare in a, I don't know, deliberate way. For those of us that overshare deliberately, I'd put you and I in that category. I think there's possibly even the divide is even harder, whereas people that aren't deliberately sharing, they'll just accidentally spill into private world. Whereas, like, would you say that there's a barrier, there's a fence up? Like, I clearly know this is my, I'm sharing these things, but I'm not going to share about how many towels I washed this week or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a funny thing, you know, because the podcast that we run is not really necessarily about Emma and my creative work. I mean, we talk a little bit about what we're doing and that kind of stuff, but really it falls largely into the parenting side of things and how we, you know, work all of that parenting kind of issues and conundrums and stuff.
As much as you're sharing more about parenting, like I suppose I haven't got a child yet, and you know, hopefully one day soon. And when we do, I'm like, I probably share less about the child. Like, we've already talked about, like, do we, like, let's kind of deliberately not share a billion things. Like,
it's funny, we, my husband and I have, yeah, policy, we don't put our kids' photos online. And even to the extent that the podcast was something where I felt like I was really just going to be talking about my experience as a parent rather than just yabbering on about my kids and all the issues and that kind of thing that they're having. I'm very conscious that even though my children are quite young, they will listen probably to these recordings at some point. And, you know, I wouldn't want them to feel, you know, embarrassed that I shared some kind of story that was, you know, their story to tell and not mine. And I think that's something that a lot of parents consider or have or should be considering in this day and age, is how much of their children and their family life they're sharing that's their kind of interpretation and their kind of story, and how much is actually their children's story and they're just kind of recounting it through their eyes. So yeah, I try to be very respectful of what I'm sharing and my experience and my interpretation and the crazy way I have reacted to some kind of family conundrum rather than just the crazy family conundrum that there is. Because I think that's really how we learn to be better parents, is analyzing our own behavior and how we're reacting to all the kind of crazy kid life, not just, you know, banging on about, you know, what little, you know, what so-and-so did at the playground and, you know, how embarrassing it was for them.
I like it. Well, look, the purpose of this is to get a little bit nerdy, and I know we kind of got sidetracked talking about the why of your new newsletter and whatnot, but would you share, like, once again, let's go full tech or full nerdy, but a bit of your workflow for doing, for your content creation, how do you collect it all together? How do you share it?
I guess, I mean, I effectively sort of work part-time in all of my businesses because I do my share of the child rearing. And so my smartphone is extremely important to me in that it's my on-the-go mini computer hub. So I have a number of apps that I guess sync across different devices, so my phone and then my computer. One of the really great ones that I love for saving content is an app called Pocket. And it's kind of like, it's kind of like Instapaper, you know, so you'll find an article online, someone's linked to it on Twitter, for example, you can save it to Pocket, and then it's it sort of converts it to a really easy to read format, just like really large text on your small screen. Generally cuts out images, so it's fast to load. So that's something where I really feel like I'm able to, by saving lots of articles, I'm able to, at a time that's convenient to me, consume a lot of interesting content in one go. And it stops me from opening the Facebook app and, you know, just mindlessly scrolling through people's pictures of their lunch and that kind of thing. It's like I've got really great articles and content just waiting to be consumed. And then same thing if I'm, you know, on my computer and working away and I'll sort of take a break and read something or listen to something, I can save it again. Has like one of those cool little browser extensions where you click the button and then it's saved to my phone. So everything syncs up, which is really great. So often when I'm kind of pulling together an issue of Sillage for every week, I will sort of look at what I've read that week and kind of, I guess, content curate it from there. So it's a really nice kind of repository, that Pocket app, for all of that stuff that I've read.
And so from there, what do you use to, tech app, web service do you use for your emailing?
I use MailChimp. I've just kind of always used it. They just keep seeming to make like cool new little bits and pieces and add-ons since they introduced the drag and drop feature a couple of years ago. It's so easy to pull together like a really nice looking email. And I do that a bit for clients as well. Like if clients are looking to start an email newsletter, I just use MailChimp. Their data reporting is just getting really, really good as well. In fact, recently I noticed they've just introduced a new function where you can do have you ever done Facebook advertising? It's just the most convoluted thing through Facebook. I can't even figure out. But basically now you can do it through MailChimp. And so they've kind of applied their reporting and their visual style to creating a Facebook ad. I'm yet to try it, but I'm very excited about, yeah, how they can possibly, like, they couldn't not possibly improve on the process, in my opinion.
It's funny how the two of us looked at that same announcement differently, because I think I saw an email from MailChimp and I hadn't looked at it yet, and I was in MailChimp, and then there's the little just pop up in the dashboard. Hey, this is the thing we're doing now, Facebook advertising. And I just thought, I don't have the emotional room for another thing. I've spent so much time trying to learn Facebook's the advertising tools there, and the Power Editor and Boosty and Audience. And I like I literally looked and I thought, I just don't think I've got the emotional room in this for my.
It's not the right time.
It's not you. It's me.
Yeah, 100%. We'll just, you know, save that page to pocket, and when you do feel like one day you're ready to, like, get the headspace, then you'll be able to, like, go and find that link that you saved that time.
I also felt really embarrassed that time, because I thought that's something that people have said or done to me. Because I'm the guy that'll say, hey, you should try this new app. And they're like, oh, no.
Oh, app overload is a total, it's a thing. Yeah, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
I regularly go through my phone and just delete apps. I'm like, if I haven't used that in the last 6 months, then if I really need it again, I can download it again. But yeah, it's, you've really got to be very aware of, you know, how much of that stuff, you know, people espouse as having changed their life. It's like, good for you, not for me.
Yeah, yeah. I used to have a really stringent app deletion kind of program, not software program, just like a regime where I only ever wanted to have one page of apps. So there's a few folders going on, but even then I'd be just a rampant deleter. But now with Unpopular, because I'm like always trying to trial new apps and see, or maybe this would help someone else, I've got four or five pages of apps now, and it's just gone, it's out of hand.
It's crazy, yeah. And I think that's the thing, like people used to always tell me about how Evernote was just the best thing ever. And I get it that there's lots of people who love Evernote out there. And I remember downloading it and, you know, sort of 5-10 minutes of play, it just wasn't immediately clear as how this was going to help me. And I don't have enough time to kind of figure out how those apps are going to work if I've already got a few different things that already work for me. I love Gmail. I think, you know, I've been using Gmail for years, and I run all of my not at Gmail addresses just through the Gmail inbox. And they recently did an app update, which I dutifully downloaded. And yeah, I don't know if I like it. It's removed a few things that I really felt like were very pertinent to my my productivity, because email is, you know, it's the way I deal with clients, it's the way I deal with book orders and that kind of thing. Yeah, it's taken a few days for me to get my head around how I'm going to tweak and pivot my regular structure to deal with this new app. I'm a bit annoyed. Then you just realize, okay, I don't pay for this. It's, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
So with all of that said, I wanted to just put a thing in front of you, and not even intending that you would change. But I suppose this is what's always going through my head: is there an app? Is there a web service that could possibly make life easier? Because if something literally does make life easier, like if he can shave time off your tasks, and you have more time to drink coffee, spend with the kids, whatever it might be, then I think it's worthwhile. Have you heard of Revue, R-E-V-U-E, the link curating email newsletter sending service?
Wow, no.
R-E-V-U-E, and I think the URL is getrevue.co, so getrevue.co. There's a free version for up to 200 subscribers, and after 200, it's like $5 or $20 a month or something like that. And the thing that I used it when it first started, and then at that point in my life, I didn't have room for another content creation area, and I just didn't. But now it links up with Zapier. So have you used Zapier?
No, I haven't.
Oh, so mad. Are you prepared to have your world rocked?
I'm writing all of this down.
Okay, so Zapier is a... Have you used If This and That, IFTTT?
Yes.
Okay,
so that Zapier, that's something I love. Yeah,
Zapier is IFTTT's mate that went to university. Like you know how IFTTT went to TAFE.
Yep.
Zapier went to uni and did the masters.
Yeah,
cool. So the same family, but Zapier is just a lot more nerdy, intense. You know, IFTTs are very kind of apply, kind of, you know, fewer options, just very simple, but powerful, but simple. Zapier is the nerdy version of that. So so you can actually have Zapier look at your pocket feed and even you can have it filter to a certain way or look at certain articles, and everything you add to a certain pocket feed, it can add to your review. So on a Friday morning, you open up review, and the email is 95% written because it's got all of your links in there. Maybe you remove a few, maybe you edit a headline or edit a blurb, and then it's literally so review is literally a tool made to send newsletters like Sillage. And so it's also got the browser extension. So you're on a page and you just send it to review, and you know, you've already got a workflow going on, so it might not even be a thing that you need, but maybe it could save you time, or maybe someone listening to it would want to get into it. Yeah, so cool. I just thought I'd share it for that purpose.
Yeah, that's great. I'm all about saving time. That's awesome. Thanks for the recommendation.
So the final stage of this podcast is maybe, hopefully, possibly I could save you a few more minutes by actually solving a problem you have as opposed to suggesting a problem you have. is there something workflowy nerdy that's kind of just giving you pain at the moment? Is there something you need to take to the nerd doctor?
Good question. I'm currently in a kind of review process of how I receive book orders, package them, and send them off. As you would know, books or just any kind of product, really, to post in Australia through good old Australia Post, it can be pretty expensive. Like, we have really expensive postage rates in Australia. So I'm currently sort of looking at how best to, minimize delivery times, and minimize overall postage costs when people buy books via my website. So I've started to use Sendal. Do you know Sendal?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
I've been really impressed with their service, given that a couple of years ago when I started using a courier service, I was surprised at how with every courier company you had to, you know, go through a reference check and sign up with all these terms and conditions. And the one I ended up using had terrible kind of web booking presence. You know, to cancel a booking that wasn't needed anymore, you had to call up their head office. And, it was ridiculous. Sendal's working really, really well. But, I'm interested to know how you, if you have any tips on for an online shop that doesn't get a whole lot of orders every week. They're kind of quite sporadic. You might get, you know, half a dozen on a Monday and nothing for the rest of the week, or you might just get one or two throughout the week, and you want to get those products to your customers quickly and efficiently at the lowest possible cost. What's your, and you know, with no damage either to the product in the post. Have you ever had any experience with that?
So tell me about what does the current workflow look like? If Josh visits the website and I choose a book, click pay, and I give you credit card details. Are you using Stripe? Are you using Shopify? What's the process there?
Yeah, so my website's on Weebly, and they interact with PayPal and Stripe. So it's the standard, go through, put in your billing address, put in your shipping address, all those details. If you're going off to PayPal, you go there and, you know, come back to the site and that kind of thing. So it's your typical kind of multi-step web checkout process. And then from my end, I receive the order and package up the, you know, because the book, I want it to arrive in fairly pristine condition. So I package it up with multiple levels of bubble wrap and, you know, and tape and all of that kind of stuff, and pop in all of my postcards and nice little bookmarks and that kind of thing. And at the moment, because of the weight of owning it, for example, it's sort of about 1.3 kilos. It falls into this quite annoying part of Australia Post's weight guidelines, in that if it's over 500 grams but under 3 kilos, it costs sort of $15-ish to send an item in one of their prepaid satchels, which I think is a little rich. I don't know. There should be some break at 1.5 kilos. But anyway, and so that it's kind of a multi-step process, and I try to batch my packaging of the books so they're kind of ready to pop in a bag and send off to the customer. I'll sort of sit in front of Netflix one night every couple of weeks and package up a whole bunch of books just ready to pop in an envelope. But yeah, it's a pretty manual process at this point. And I would really love also just to delight both myself and the customer to have something that just looked really nice when it arrived on your doorstep rather than one of those garish red and white Australia Post bags.
This is just as so everyone listening knows, we haven't been doing background preparation. I'm kind of thrown at this. And the first thing that comes to my mind is ShipStation. ShipStation.com. Have you looked at ShipStation?
No, I haven't.
So ShipStation is a middleman for the e-commerce platforms, and I've just while you were talking, I just double checked, and Weebly is one of the e-commerce partners that I works with. Also works with WooCommerce, which is probably it's the biggest WordPress e-commerce space, and also Shopify, eBay as well, Squarespace, and Magento. So for everyone listening, they're kind of you're probably using one of those. If you're not, you probably should be, because I'm sure they'd make your life a little bit easier. And so ShipStation talks to your e-commerce provider, and once the sale is complete, the order is given to ShipStation, and it gives you shipping quotes and prints out shipping labels, which for you, as far as shipping a book beautifully, does it go into a cardboard box and then inside the shipping the satchel?
Yeah, if I'm sending something via courier, I can send it, package it however I want. I just have to print off the label and stick it on. If you're sending via Australia Post and you want to get the most economical costing, I suppose, yeah, you have to pop it inside one of those red and white bags, which is fine. You can do whatever you like inside. But yeah, just that, the nice kind of I've gotten the gift in the mail kind of presence to the customer, I think I would really love. So yeah, it's a combination of cardboard and bubble wrap is my general book packaging.
Now, as far as actually putting in a truck and it going to the customer, ShipStation talks to DHL Australia, FedEx Australia, and also Australia Post. And I'm doing research on the go here. And also, I suppose Amazon fulfillment doesn't work in Australia. But yeah, they talked to DHL, FedEx, UPS, and Australia Post. And I wouldn't be surprised if depending on the weight, size, and location, that it would actually start finding some better postage deals for you as well.
It sounds very similar to Sendal, although maybe a few steps removed if it's automatically taking your order and giving you all of the stuff. It's basically booking the job for you. Yeah, that sounds good. I'll investigate. Thanks.
Now, as with all recommendations, you've got to give it a go and see if it works for you. But I know that process would infuriate me. Many, 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 many moons ago, when I was a younger man, I actually worked in a warehouse, and we supplied beauty like creams and stuff. I was obviously a real product guy. But we supplied stuff to Meyer and David Jones, and also to, the gift shop down the road where you buy a little cream for grandma. So we supplied that kind of stuff. And back then, even it was absolute hell for us, because we had the ordering software, obviously the e-commerce software that would come through to us, and we could print a label, luckily. But from there, for each box, we would have to get out the calculator. And eventually you really start to get to know, if I'm sending a 20-kilo box to Sydney, then I'll use this company. And if I'm sending a 5-kilo box to regional New South Wales, it's probably better to go this company. So because that's the beauty of having warehouse staff that know postage and whatnot. But if it's just you, like, I can only assume that your care factor for postage is five or six layers lower than most things in your business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So ShipStation kind of sounds like it would fill that. So it would fill that quota, and you'll say, these guys are this much. And then you'll get to know. I've already got 5 orders going to this postage company. I'd probably prefer to go this one again. So, and that might be a really good idea for you. So check that out.
Yeah, awesome. And I think it's hard, being a creative person, you just want to get back to the fun creative stuff and the doing, and all of those kind of more menial tasks that come with every kind of business can feel quite draining. So anything that, speeds it up, makes the workflow a little bit easier is a good thing.
That's what we're all about here at Unpopular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So before we leave, an opportunity for you to plug the hell out of yourself. What if you meet a stranger in the street and they happen to be a creative, which I'm sure that everyone listening to this podcast would hopefully classify themselves as a creative, even if you don't pick up a paintbrush.
Broad category,
it is,
yeah.
Correct. So what do you want to plug to them?
Look, I think you know, my passion is really creating those kinds of resources that creatives need to kind of make them their businesses, their careers, their creative lives much better and more fulfilling for themselves. You know, personally, I'm really passionate about creatives protecting their copyright and their IP and making their livelihoods really work for them. So, I mean, it would be my dream that every creative in Australia had a copy of Owning It in their study to constantly refer to and protect themselves that way.
Wouldn't it be good?
Wouldn't it be great? That's the plan.
I've got so many friends that are amazing creators in photography or other, and they'll just throw around terms like trademarks and copyrights, mm-hmm. and they want to get a patent on a photo. I'm like,
yeah,
oh, you need it. The book.
Patents, yes.
You can't get patents on photos.
Yeah, you don't want to patent your logo. It's just not going to work. I'm sorry, don't waste your time. Yeah.
So even just purely to be able to have that conversation, like just to be able to, like, you might still not lodge a patent for your logo, but at least you will know that you don't lodge a patent for your logo. So when you talk to a lawyer, or even if you go researching, you can just, you know, the terminology.
Yeah,
you're not going in there like an.
Yeah, and it breaks my heart every time I see, you know, it happens weekly. You see someone you follow on your feed sort of saying, oh, you know, this person's ripped me off, or, you know, I've had this experience with a client, or et cetera, et cetera. I even saw something recently where someone I knew, and I knew that she had a copy of the book, and she was effectively sort of accusing someone of having copied her design. And I just wanted to ring her up and say, don't talk about this on social media. It could end so badly. So even if you, just arming yourself with that knowledge of what is and isn't kind of kosher and how to do things, especially when it comes to online.
We
cover that a lot in the book. And I really just want to kind of make sure everyone's informed, everyone's knowing what to do and what not to do. So all that kind of stuff doesn't happen as often. It would be great.
I love Sillage. So go plug how to sign up to Sillage.
Yeah. So you can sign up to Sillage at creativemindshq.com, which is my website, and click on the little Sillage link there. And, you know, you'll just get an email from me every week with some links to a couple of really great articles, things that will make you sound kind of, you know, cool and in the know at the dinner party you attend on the weekend, and, you know, just really good stuff of the internet. I'm finding it for you. So, you don't need to.
I've literally seen a link in there, and I'm sharing that on Facebook. People need to know that I have cool links.
Exactly. That's right.
If there's any kind of street cred you need in 2017, it's cool links.
Yeah, I love a good recommendation. So, hopefully others do as well.
Tess, thank you so much for joining me on Popular Podcast.
Thanks, Josh. All the best with the podcast. It's a great listen.